Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, Text 1. Sri Narada Uvacha. Evam Suradaya Sarve. Brahma Rudra Purasara. No paitum asakan manyu, samrambam surasadam. Translation: The great sage Narada Muni continued, the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other great demigods dared not come forward before the Lord, who was at that time extremely angry. Repeating the verse, the great saint Narada Muni continued, that time was extremely short. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, Krodha Bhakta Dvesha Jane, anger should be used to punish a demon who is envious of devotees. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy, all have their proper use in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotee. A devotee of the Lord cannot tolerate blasphemy of the Lord or His other devotees, and the Lord also cannot tolerate blasphemy of a devotee. Thus, Lord Nrisingadev was so very angry that the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and even the goddess of fortune, who was the Lord's constant companion, could not pacify him, even after offering prayers of glorification and praise. No one was able to pacify the Lord in his anger. But because the Lord was willing to exhibit his affection for Prahlad Maharaj, all the demigods and the others present before the Lord pushed Prahlad Maharaj forward to pacify him. So, Srila Prabhupada is giving us this understanding of Narottam Das Thakur, that all of these different aspects, these different moods, aspects of personality can be used in the service of the Lord. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya. So we may question, how can madness be used? Well, dance madly. You can dance madly. That's very nice. Sometimes devotees act like madmen when they're on Sankirtan. They're just, books are flying out, and they're not really actually on a human level. There was one devotee, Pragosh, that used to distribute in Grand Central Station in New York, and every morning all these businessmen would be coming in from New Jersey and from northern part of New York to go to their workplace. So this one man, he saw Pragosh distributing, and he stopped and he watched. And the next day he came back, he saw again. He said, this boy is really intense. So he offered him, he said, I can give you, $200,000 a year if you come and work for me, if you can sell like this for me. Pragosh just laughed and said, no, this is for my spiritual master. So he was getting nothing in terms of material remuneration. And he used to be so fixed up. I remember one time he showed me, he was sick. He had a huge carbuncle on his hip. It was as big as a fist, huge. And it was frightening to see. But he was going out on Sankirtan every day. So this is a kind of madness. This is a madness. It's also a kind of lusty to serve the spiritual master. That is called loilam, and you actually become lusty to serve Krishna. So that's a form of this. Loha. So, different different aspects they can be used. Pride can be used. Prabhupada said, I'm very proud of Krishna, what Krishna has done to spread Krishna consciousness, what Krishna has done through him. He did not take the credit. He was very proud of Krishna. And I remember when I was first a devotee, one person came to the temple and commented, you know, all the devotees, they seem rather proud, you know. They don't seem so humble. I said, yeah, well, they're doing what no one else can do. You know, this is something no one else can do. So they're a little proud, and they're also proud of their position. You know, everyone, they say the pauper is proud of his penny. So they're proud of their position as servants of Krishna. That is the designation that we're given. Das or Dasi. This is a very high distinguished thing. I remember one time I was signing some contract in Delhi. I was working there on the exhibition. So I had contractors to deal with, and I was signing some contract. And the contractor said, don't put Das, that is kind of a low-class thing. I said, oh, no, that's a very high-class thing. That's very wonderful to be a Krishna servant. That's the highest position. So we don't take it that we become full of pride for ourselves, but pride for the association that we're keeping. We become a little proud like that. But of course, that pride has to be very much tempered. We have to watch that it doesn't become something that we use against us. Actually, all the devotees, all of us here, will develop mystic powers. Mystic city. One of the favorite mystic cities is to attract many followers. So that will happen. That can happen. If a devotee follows the regulative principles, chants Hare Krishna, it becomes powerful. But as long as we're here in this conditioned state, and we should consider that as long as we have a body, we are conditioned, then we have to be careful that we don't use these powers for our own self-aggrandizement, to make ourselves grand, to make ourselves wonderful. But they must be used in Krishna's service. So someone can take many, many thousands of disciples, but he has to have the commitment to understand who he is acting for. He has to appreciate his unique position as a clear via media, presenting only what Krishna wants, only what Krishna's desires are for those disciples. As soon as he tries to enjoy or exploit the position of being spiritual master for his own pleasure, then that exploitation becomes sinful, it becomes mundane, it's divorced from Krishna. And so we always have to be aware that naturally we will gain potency in this Krishna consciousness movement. But how that potency is used, that remains our constant responsibility. Not to use it for any mundane self-seeking situation. I was thinking last night, it seemed that my work here is going rather slowly. Although I've made some contacts with producers and so forth for films. It's going a little slowly. And last night, a devotee from Poland, he was telling me about one man who made a film in Poland. And he has a display in the stores in America and in Europe. They have this display and they sell things right at what they call the point of purchase, the POP, so the pop. So this display is showing the man with a shaved head, and he's become a devotee. And is this thing, how I became a Hare Krishna devotee. And so he's a very famous actor in Poland and very popular with the young people, although he's old. He's about 61 years old. He's very popular with the young people and because he speaks very truthfully about things. And so he made a film in which he became very frustrated with his material life, and then he became a Hare Krishna devotee. And devotees asked him why you did this, and he said, because I see that you people are very happy. You know, he just acted on that platform, not actually chanting 16 rounds, but he's acting on that platform. So I see you people are very happy. So, but within the scope of the looking up this information. I was in the internet, the cafe there, and looking up this information about the man because I was curious what he had told me. And I saw that the write-up of this particular story, this is called The Weather Tomorrow, or Tomorrow's Weather, this write-up, there was no mention of Krishna. No mention of Hare Krishna, nothing. They just had a completely different little storyline, you know, one paragraph giving the storyline, but no mention of Krishna. So I remarked to my friend, and I said, you know, there's no mention of Krishna. He said, yes, they do that also, the Polish Woodstock. They call it the Polish Woodstock. They don't call it the Hare Krishna Village Festival, you know. So like that, we can understand there's an international conspiracy amongst the demoniac rulers of the earth, and they pass it down to their newspaper editors and so forth, people under their control. You don't say Hare Krishna. You don't mention Hare Krishna. Please don't say Hare Krishna. This is not something we want. Because why? Because they are selling newspapers and television shows and so forth, all on the basis of their advertising. And their advertising is for what? So many mundane things. Buy this, you'll be happy. Buy that. And what is our message? These things won't make you happy. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to tell you. You're barking up the wrong tree, as they say. With a dog, in America they have these hunting dogs. So if the dog is barking at the wrong tree and the animal they're chasing is in another tree, it's like calling someone a dog. So you're barking up the wrong tree. So like this, mundane world is very much against, and they're very much organized against. It's not by chance that they're against, or not just this doesn't happen occasionally. This is a strong thing. So I went back to my room and I was a little tired. I sent off some information to some other people, other producers and so on. And I was a little tired and I was thinking, you know, Krishna, what is this? You know, am I going to be successful at this or not? You know. And I came to a conclusion that whatever Krishna arranges, I'll accept. I have no choice. Being impotent, practically speaking, in these matters. I have no choice but to accept what Krishna arranges. So if I become humbled by so-called failure, then that is also Krishna's mercy. And I was very fortunate. I just had a very nice feeling that whatever he arranges, I'm completely satisfied with. Because it's a big hassle to do all this work anyway, approaching people, asking for huge amounts of money and so forth. It's not my usual thing. So some people, like they're venture capitalists, they do all this thing all the time, dealing with millions of dollars. This is not my usual activity. I'm very happy to mow my lawn in America and keep up the little temple service and so forth. So by Krishna's grace, though, we can understand that these different moods, this anger, and we could become a little angry. Actually, Krishna, when he's talking to Arjuna, throughout the whole course of the great war, he's encouraging him, and Arjuna's losing hope. He's falling back, and oh, why am I doing this? This is so horrible. Not just at the beginning. He accepts Krishna's as a spiritual master, and he agrees to follow him. But then, during the course of his fighting, he often falls back. He becomes remorseful. And so Krishna has to encourage him again. On and on, it's going like this. So naturally, we will also feel at different times some lack of encouragement in Krishna's service. But what is that? That is not, it's not a blasphemy. It's not that I have no faith in Krishna. It's just that I am given the opportunity to realize my only shelter is Krishna. It's my only shelter. That I cannot take shelter of any mundane achievements or any affections coming from... You've all been so affectionate to me, very, very kind to me. But I cannot take shelter of that. I can appreciate it because you're devotees and you're being very kind. But I cannot take complete shelter of that because I have to take complete shelter of Krishna because your attitude might change, right? It's true. This is the nature of the jiva. We're all on the same platform. So sometimes we're thinking this person is very nice, and sometimes we think that person is not so nice. Krishna has made this variety of emotions. This is not accidental. This is Krishna's arrangement, that people will feel these different emotions. Sometimes we feel envious. I remember asking Prabhupada on a morning walk in Tehran. I was feeling, actually, the man who was hosting us there was very wealthy. He was a Treya Rishi, a GBC man, and he was very wealthy, and I was working there and in a lowly position, more or less, and I was working in a pretty much a karmi job, basically. That was the program in Iran, to get a karmi job and then invite people on Sundays to the program. And I had desire also at that time to make a film, and Atreya Rishi was very kind to me, and he said, you come here and you get some practice. And see, I wasn't very practiced. So I got jobs in advertising, and I was doing that. But anyway, I was feeling something envy, because it was a small group of devotees, only about 5 devotees there, and their wives, about 10 devotees altogether. So we were like very close, and it was easy. I remember one devotee, I was envious of him, Dayananda. Dayananda is actually a very wonderful devotee. He was my president in Dallas when I was serving there. And he was always very fired up and excited. It's very nice. He's now in New York. He manages the 26 Second Avenue Preaching Center. He renovated that building, got control of that building and that space, and he renovated it. They have regular programs there all the time. So Dayananda had a very good job, and he was learning Farsi, which is the language. He was doing very well. Oh, it's very nice. So I was thinking, you know, this is, why can't I have so much intelligence? I have a very hard time with languages, remembering anything, even names. Very hard time. So I realized, you know, you're pretty envious. And from the day one in Krishna consciousness, I was blessed to understand that I have this quality of envy. And I think everyone does, but we don't like to see it. We don't like to mention it. Chanaka Pandit says, don't advertise your faults. But for the sake of instruction, we can advertise a little bit. So I asked Prabhupada, I said, why are we so envious? And he said, that is your material disease. So everyone has that disease. Everyone in the material world, they have this disease. One devotee, he said, that person is very nice, Lakshmi Nisringa. He's now in Alachua. And he said, he's not envious. It's very nice. I think this is the only person Prabhupada ever commented like that. But at any rate, that nature, that envious nature, is there. And we best to recognize it and take the medicine for it. This conditioned life that we lead, where we're always feeling some pressure or some animosity or some envy, this can only be overcome. A real appreciation for the other devotees, appreciation for how wonderful they are in helping us to become Krishna conscious. Whether they're presenting us with a problem or a garland or a nice prasadam or giving us a kick in the pants, as we say, whatever, we should be appreciative and non-envious. Because this envy, this is, of course, the original cardinal sin. In the Bible, it's nicely described that Adam and Eve, they wanted to be like God. They envied God. So they were coerced by the serpent, the devil, to break a commandment that God had given them. He said, you can do anything you want here, but don't eat this fruit of this forbidden fruit. So the serpent, he convinced them, God just doesn't want you to know as much as he knows. That's all. That's the only reason he's telling you. If you eat this fruit, you'll know as much as, you'll be God. You'll be like God. So they became interested. And at first they resisted, but then later they took. So this envy is the original reason we are here in the material world. We've envied Krishna. We wanted to be like Krishna. We wanted to have the same enjoyments as Krishna. as opposed to being enjoyed by Krishna. So leaving that spiritual world, we've got ourselves into a big mess. You know, it's a big mistake. As I say, jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Of course, that is a that's an analogy that Yudhisthira uses when he's asked by, who is it, Dharmaraj, what is the material, what's the news? And the news is that the whole world is like a frying pan and people are jumping out of the frying pan and into the fire. A perfect analogy, right? Because everything they're doing in material life, we see this so well in America, everything they're doing there to increase the pleasure of their life is causing distress. They started to build, buy these big, big cars, and then the gas prices went crazy, tripled, and now everybody's trying to get rid of their big, big car, and all the car manufacturers who made these big, big cars, they're not happy, they can't sell the cars, no one wants the big cars anymore. So like this, they make so many solutions, and each solution creates another problem. So our Krishna consciousness is the ultimate solution, however. It is not a solution that is created by materialistic men or by ordinary persons. It is a solution that is offered by Krishna. Krishna says, you think of me at the time of your death, the one who knows my pastimes, my activities, he'll come to me. So this requires just simple hearing process, some chanting, taking some nice foodstuff offered to Krishna. It requires just some simple remedial measures to overcome our envy of Krishna. And he doesn't really require much, doesn't require a great deal. He doesn't go and say, you have to give me millions of dollars and you have to pay this fee, you know, and you have to... sell your children and so forth. You know, it's a very simple, simple thing. You don't have to send your children to a war or anything like that. Unless they're kshatriyas and they want to go. But you have to somehow or another take shelter of Krishna. Somehow or another we have to give up our enviousness. Enviousness says that I can do things myself. I don't need anyone else's help. And the fact that if you envy someone, if you're envious of someone, and you think badly of them, you'll never get what they have. It's like if you want to be rich, if you're poor and you want to be rich, you have to make friends with rich people. If you're just envious and mean, and when you see rich people, you spit, you know, how you'll become rich? You cannot envy those persons who have something that you want. So Krishna has something that we want. He has the eternal pastimes and pleasures in the spiritual world. We cannot envy him. We have to decide that we want to serve him. We want to associate with him. We're willing to do that. And of course, what can be the objection? He is so sweet. Dravida made very nice poem. He said, Krishna is sweet, sweet, complete. And he keeps repeating that. You're sweet, complete. So this is the solution we have in material life to get past all of these different problems. Actually, how much time do we have? A little time? Yeah. I was going to talk a little about anger because Prabhupada, my pastimes with Prabhupada, devotees have asked me about my pastimes with Prabhupada. And so I thought maybe I'll talk a little bit about how I made Prabhupada angry. I made Prabhupada angry on probably a couple occasions. First time I was giving massage. He didn't get terribly angry, but he was frustrated. And I had been told, you know, to just make this motion like this, pinch the skin, so forth. The devotee told me this thing. So you pinch the skin like that. That's all he told me. So I was doing that, and Prabhupada was there, and he said, rub. And I didn't understand rub, a simple word, you know, three letters. I couldn't understand it. And so I started pinching harder. And Prabhupada said, rub, why don't you rub? And he showed me like this. I said, oh. So when the spiritual master is displeased, we kind of fall apart. Of course, I had no choice at that point. I could not fall apart. I had to keep rubbing. So I was rubbing Prabhupada. So anyway, I was rubbing, and Prabhupada accepted the massage. And Sudama Maharaj had arranged that I would give the massage because he had been traveling with Prabhupada, and he had been playing Madunga at the Ratha Yatra in San Francisco, and he had developed a large sore on his hand, so he couldn't, you know, touch Prabhupada in that condition. And so he asked me if I would like to do it, and I did. That was very, very nice. Prabhupada was like a rock. His skin was soft, like a lotus. When you pushed against him, and of course, I'm a big man, and Prabhupada is small. When you pushed against him, there was no give. And he was just completely solid, like a boulder. It was like putting, you know, like pushing on a wall. You may think that there's some movement, but then you think, well, it's just my hand. The bone is just pushing against. Yeah. And it was amazing. Totally amazing. Many devotees who gave Prabhupada massage have commented like this. He was just like a solid rock. So that was very nice. And then another time I made Prabhupada angry. I was in Delhi, and I had been traveling a lot and wandering around and staying in these cheap guest houses and so forth. Prabhupada was there for a big Pandal program. This is 1976. And so I got the job of guarding Prabhupada's car. The devotees from Germany had brought this huge Mercedes-Benz. At that time, 76 is a huge car in India. It's very amazing. So I was sent to guard the car, and there was a line, a rope line around the car. And the whole space was about half as big as the temple. And there were thousands and thousands of people standing around the rope, you know, trying to get past the rope. And I had to go around and say, stop, don't, no, stay back, you know. And the car was just sitting there. So this went on for some time, and then someone sent some relief for me. So I went backstage to the back of the Pandal. Prabhupada was on the dais there, giving the stage, giving the talk. And then when he came back, there was a whole entourage behind him, and he was walking in front. And he started to come towards where I was. And these two girls, they dove at Prabhupada's feet. So they just went so fast. They were standing about here, and they dove. And I kind of went like this. And Prabhupada looked at me and said, why are you pushing? Actually, I was trying to stop them, you know, because in my mind, I saw this scenario that they'll go in front of Prabhupada, grab his feet, and all these people are walking back of Prabhupada, and they'll fall over on him. This is in my mind, you know, something strange. I hadn't been getting a lot of sleep and like that. So I was kind of, I was at a loss. I didn't push. And he probably said, why are you pushing? And he looked like this. And at that time, I just felt like, well, that's the end of my devotional service. I'm finished. You know, I'm completely destroyed. What will I do now? I race through my mind. I'll go back to America and become a Karmi and become degraded again. And what will happen to me? I was really bereft, you know, like floating in the middle of space. Where am I, you know? And I was really, for like about 3 or 4 minutes, it seemed like eternity, actually. It just seemed forever. I was just like completely lost. What has happened? My whole devotional life is ruined. I did so much. I tried to do so much service. And now my spiritual master is angry with me. And so I stood there for a moment, and then someone came up to me, and he said, so you got the mercy. And I realized, that's what it was, you know. So the spiritual master, he may sometimes, you know, raise the hood, as the example is with the serpent. The serpent became a disciple of Narada Muni or something. He became a disciple, and so then everyone, the kids were teasing him and throwing rocks in because he wouldn't bite anyone anymore. And so the serpent, he asked, what should I do? You know, I'm getting beat up. So they said, you can show the hood like this. So the spiritual master his anger, in a sense, is like that. He always loves the disciple. He always appreciates the disciple's service. But he gets angry to instruct, because sometimes that's what it takes, is someone to shout at you, you know? No, don't do that. Otherwise, we just go on about our business, you know, in our trance, as it were. So I often wondered about that. Why Prabhupada didn't understand, you know, that I wasn't pushing. I was just trying to stop these girls, you know. And so later I understood, because I'd be pushing people and I would think, oh, why are you pushing? Sometimes I would push, I'd get angry with someone and give a little push, you know, at different times and different circumstances. So I would just think, oh, Prabhupada chastised me in advance of what I was doing. So in this way, you can understand the spiritual master, he knows so much, and he can use all these different moods, his anger and so forth, his lust. Prabhupada, how was Prabhupada lusty? Well, he liked to take money. He liked to take money. Remember, there's this wonderful story about, was that yogi in Calcutta? Someone was offering him money, big amount of money, and he's going like this, no. So Prabhupada said, they should take a picture of me. I'd just be pulling it in. Yes, give it like this. Because he understood how to use it. See, I know how to use it. He doesn't know how to use it, but I know how to use it in Krishna's service. So like this, the spiritual master can exemplify, all of us, we can exemplify all of these different attitudes for Krishna. All these different attitudes can be used in the service of the Supreme Lord. The gopis, they're lusty for Krishna, but their lust is overcome by their desire to serve Krishna just the way he wants. Radharani, sometimes she displays anger with Krishna, but she knows exactly how much anger he wants to experience from her. She is perfectly in tune with his desire. So Krishna, he likes, from his queens in Dwarka, he likes to play henpecked. You know, it's like the you know the henpeck? You know that expression? There's the two kinds of chicken, the rooster and the hen. So the hen, when she pecks the rooster sometimes, you know, she's pushing him away and so forth. Usually it's not the position of the woman, the female, to push the man around, to push the male around. But sometimes the hen will do this. So a husband who is under the control of his wife is called henpecked. So Krishna is like that. He accepts the chastisements and the requests, and he does those things that his wives require and ask him to do. And he enjoys like that. And they know just how much to push. So Krishna, he can satisfy everyone in all of these different moods. And whatever he does to us, we should always be very much appreciative that this is for our instruction, to help us develop patience, to help us develop a rapport with Krishna, to start talking to Krishna. When Krishna puts a devotee in a desperate condition, it is meant to increase his surrender, increase his dependence. We want to give up this independence. In America, they have this independence. Also, you have Independence Day here. So, last few years, I was thinking, this is not what we want. We do not want independence from Krishna. We want full dependence on the Supreme Lord. That will make us happy. That will actually satisfy all of our desires. And so, pursuing that dependence is the business of Krishna consciousness. That's the internal business. There's so many external businesses. But pursuing dependence on Krishna is wonderful, actually. As one grows older, the body starts to do these different things, reminding you that soon it will be finished. And so the dependence it comes more and more gradually. it becomes easier and easier to make the dependence, because at every moment there's some kind of pain or anxiety. But a devotee is so fortunate. He's so much freed from that ultimate anxiety of what is death, what is happening after death. Ultimately, if you analyze those persons who are in the karmic life, they're not even in karmic life, the vikarmic life. They don't even understand what they're doing in their life. But they're enjoying the fruits of their karma. But their big apprehension, whether they're rich or poor, is death. The D word, you know. Everyone is afraid of death. Why? Because they don't know what happens after death. You know, if you don't know what's in that room, you're really terrified for some reason. You have no idea what's in that room. Then you're going to be a little careful going into there, you know. Of course, that's not such a very good example. But whatever we don't know, the fear of the unknown, when people make these horror movies, they have what they call the suspension. And they try to keep the monster from being seen until the end, so that your imagination builds this horrible, horrible figure. And the fear of the unknown is the greatest fear, like that. So these karmis, these vikarmis, they have no idea what is waiting for them. And they're very much afraid that it may be hellish punishment. It was when I was writing some information for my film to try to sell it, some marketing information. And I thought about this movie, Ghosts. In this movie, Ghosts, these Yamadutas, they come and they take a man away, this bad man who's killed someone. They take him away at the end of his life, and he's cut in half by this glass falling from a window, but then his form, his subtle body reforms. And he stands up and he's looking around, and all of a sudden, the Yamadutas come to him. So this movie is extremely popular, very popular. Why? Because it actually has something truth about it. There's actual truth in it. So people are not knowing. There's one devotee, Vichitravirya in England. He had a book, Famous Last Words, of these very of the famous, rich and famous or whatever. And he said 80% of these famous people, these notarized people, lords and ladies and kings and so forth, they're screaming, "Get back, you demons, get back," at the time of their death. They're seeing the Yamadutas come. Actually speaking like that, terrified. So this film had actual some basis in fact, you know, not just some bad guy, you know, but the Yamadutas. They're there to take you away if you're a sinful person. And so the karmis are afraid, even though they're acting in such a way, they're very proud and they're bold and they're not afraid. But then at the time of death, they become very, very much fearful. And they won't even talk about death. Can't even think about it. I met a man once who sold burials. He sold the casket and the cemetery plot and so forth. He sold the whole thing. He worked his way through college doing that. And he was telling me, you know, some people, they just can't talk about it. They think they want to talk about it at first, but then when they actually start to think about putting themselves in a box and so forth, putting the box in the ground, covering it up, when they start, they say, "Oh, please, we just don't want to talk about this. We don't want to talk about this. Please leave." He would be there selling them. And, of course, in the sales position, they always have the husband and wife together. And they would look at each other, no, this can't be happening. We can't be thinking about this death, you know. It's unreal. It's not possible. But it exists. Everyone is dying. We see it all the time. Everyone is dying. Anyone who takes birth, you see them grow. You see the beautiful little children and their babies, and then they get larger and larger. And we see this constantly. It's moving on. You see the folds under the chin, and you know it's soon it will happen, you know. So the reality of our temporary situation here is mind-blowing. Why is it so strange? Because we sense we're eternal. Even the small child, he's asking, "Where was I before I came here?" with no religious training at all. He's just, where was I before I came here? He's asking that question. Many, many children ask that question of their parents. And so that's a concern. And parents don't have any answers if they're not Krishna conscious. They have no understanding. So they have no understanding where they will go either. And this is terrifying. So we are so much blessed. We have that understanding. At worst, we get a much better life on a higher planet. We can continue our worship of Krishna there. That's the worst case scenario, as they say. The bottom line. So by Krishna's grace, the more we develop our dependence on him, the more qualified we'll be to join his pastimes in our next life. And this is our objective. This is the thing that we want to become lusty for. We want to develop this lust to become Krishna's servants. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Everyone's convinced. Chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Krishna, Hare Bol. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.